I'm very happy to be talking to you today, really. No, I'm not talking to anybody else. I'm not talking to... It's not an in-between episode. I'm in the middle of editing Daniela Astona's podcast. That should be out soon. And over the Christmas, I was editing the Bennett Prize video, which if you haven't seen it, it's on my website if you want to go and have a look at it. And this is kind of an experiment, really. The interviews with the artists, they take a lot of time to put together, line up the interviews and a lot of emailing, a lot of research then before the actual conversation, then there's a recording. And then the editing takes a long time as well. And then the in-between episodes, they take even longer. So, yeah, I thought, well, I wonder if I could just record something quickly, just a little quick, like a catch-up with the, you know, like a friendly little, yeah, catch-up, what's going on, how's it going, and try and get it out quickly so that you have a little podcast to listen to, and then the, you know, everything else will be as normal. So you can tell me if you want more of this kind of thing or not. But yeah, so it's kind of an experiment. You know, we're all artists. You have to try things, don't you? You have to give it a go and see. And yeah, I kind of like to just be able to get something out quickly and then keep going with the stuff that takes longer. So recently, like in the new year, I've been including more of the other things that I do in my Instagram feed. And as you probably know, you know about the podcast. I hope you know about the podcast. Why would you be listening to this if you don't know about the podcast? So I do the podcast. I paint as well. You probably knew that as well. I'm also a craniosacral therapist. You may or may not have known that. And I write. I write books. Maybe you'll know that from the podcast as well. I've been sort of broadcasting my latest, the book I'm working on at the moment, at the end of the in-between episodes. I'll put them all together, actually. I put the four chapters together in episode 130. So if you want to listen to them all together, that's the episode to go to. And as I upload new chapters, I'll keep putting them in episode 130 so you can listen to the whole thing. So by the end, all going well, it should be pretty much a whole audiobook there in episode 130. I'm in the middle of trying to get one of my other books onto Audible. Very difficult. God, the technical requirements they require are really stringent. Like, this podcast wouldn't be acceptable in for an Audible book. You can do it at home. I've already tried twice, and no, it didn't pass the tests. Bass, floor level, noise, all sorts of stuff that I never heard of before and had to try and figure out. Anyway, I'll give it another go. So yeah, I've been including more of the other things that I do because I kind of realized that, you know, I do these four things, but then over it all, I've got this came out of a conversation I was having with my wife about, we were trying to make plans, very serious grown-up plans for our future. Not when I say it like that, it sounds like that, you know, it was the first time we'd ever done that. It's not. We're doing this all the time. But there was something that came up about, you know, committing to a particular future. And I can't remember what the plan was, but I remember coming back to her and saying, you know what, I can't. I do all these four things, but really overarching all that, there's this thing that I've been involved in since I was as long as I can remember, to do with consciousness and reality and, you know, yeah, some people call it the kind of spiritual life. I don't really like that term, but I'm very conscious of the, you know, that life is a mysterious, wonderful thing that it seems foolish to kind of predict. It's fine to have goals, but I never take them that seriously because I know what life is like. It just kind of charges in and changes everything. And what, you know, I'd like to do this. I'd like to do this thing. I want this goal. I want to achieve this thing. And you can aim towards it and go towards it. It's great. But in my experience, just in my life, it may or may not happen. I mean, I know people who can do goal setting and they achieve their goals and it's fantastic. I tried many times. But this deeper thing that I love, if you like, it just, I think it overrides it or whatever. Because, like, I often think, well, let me just pause for a minute here. If I get back to craniosacral, right? Craniosacral therapy, I won't bore you now with the big long explanation about craniosacral therapy, but it's kind of like listening with your hands. You're kind of listening to the other person's body to kind of hear what it's trying to do as it's trying to fix itself and where it's getting stuck. And then as you're listening with your hands, you're trying to help it do what it's already trying to do, which is fix itself. So it requires you to be very quiet on the inside and listening with your hands and your whole being, if you like. And I kind of feel like I do that with life, you know. And I don't really know why, but I've always had that feeling of that there's a big mysterious movement to life. And I, for some reason, I just know that I love it. And in a weird, non-specific kind of way, I think it loves me back. I know it loves me back. I have that feeling. So I'm there kind of listening to life. What's life trying to do? Where is it going to go? And get out of its way. Or not get out of its way. Like, not surf it, but be with it rather than pushing against it. So the idea for me going, I'm going to, you know, have a goal of doing this particular thing, it's very contrary to how I am in the inside, because I know I'm part of life, and for me to have things that I would like, and yeah, I'll try and aim for that. That's life expressing itself. But for me to kind of be attached to it and go, no, I know better than life. I'm going to insist that my particular goal is achieved and I don't care what happens. It doesn't happen like that for me. So I realized that, just going back to the four things that I do, that those are the things I do, craniosacral, podcast, art, and writing. Then overarching is who I am, which is this, I don't know, this mystical kind of magic-y, listening to life kind of thing. That overarches everything that I do. So part of it has been recently, I live in a lovely part of Ireland. There's really lovely scenery all around me, great natural beauty, big mountains, big, well, you know, not Alps, not the Himalayas, but bigish, big enough. Like, I think the tallest one is, I don't know, 3,000 feet or something like that. So it's not small, but they're pretty striking. They get snow on them and they look great. I've lived in this part of Ireland for, well, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years, something like that. But only in the last 6 months, the mountains have been kind of calling me. That's the only way I can describe it. I said to my wife, the mountains are calling me. And she was like, oh, okay. Now, I didn't really know what that meant, is other than that I wanted to go up them. So, I've been slowly. I used to do a lot of hiking when I was in my teens. I was in the Venture Scouts, which is like the teenage version of the Boy Scouts. There were girls in the Scouts as well. So I knew about it from back then. I did a lot of hiking. So I've been slowly getting my bits and pieces, and I've been started to go up the mountains, and it's been great. I don't know why I want to go up there. I haven't had this big epiphany or anything like that up the mountains, but it's something else that I've been doing, and it's lovely. Something about it is great. Well, the first time was beautiful. The second time was terrible. It's raining, horrible. Didn't even get where I wanted to go. But I still, when I came away after a day or two, I realized something had changed inside me as a result. So this whole thing of like intuition and listening to life and then listening to inside, it's like, for me anyway, what I've discovered is that life is full of paradoxes, and that things are never one thing or the other. They're always a kind of a mix. Like, I put this picture of Brooke Shields up on my Instagram, and she did this article in 2011 about her experience with craniosacral therapy and how it helped her with her jaw. She had a problem with her jaw. She went to a craniosacral therapist and had a great result. And this article came out in 2011. And the title of the article was Gently Does It. And when I was reading that, I was like, no way. because I didn't start this podcast, this particular podcast, until 2013. And I don't remember seeing that article with Brooke Shields. Maybe I did, but I don't think so. So it was like, wow. It's an article about craniosacral therapy, Brooke Shields, 2011. And it's called Gently Does It. And then I start this podcast. And I call it Gently Does It. I didn't know. And it's like this weird loop. And maybe that's true. Maybe it's a beautiful synchronous thing. But as often happens when I, you know, start to hear that kind of part of me going, ooh, wow, that's so, so synchronous and beautiful. I kind of, well, I remember learning to play the piano accordion. When I lived in Australia, for about 6 months, I kept thinking about learning the piano accordion for no reason. It would just come into my mind. I'd have this image of myself playing this piano accordion, a big black piano accordion. And it was weird. It was very weird because, in some cultures, playing the piano accordion is very cool. When I was growing up, it wasn't. You know, I grew up when punk rock was coming out and, you know, the 80s. The last thing people were playing was the piano accordion. There was a big country and western show band scene in Ireland, particularly rural Ireland. And it was very uncool for, you know, a teenager in Dublin. And they all played piano accordions, of course, as part of their show band thing. So, you know, I was very surprised that I was thinking about playing the piano accordion. But it kept coming into my mind. So I kind of went, okay, fine. I'll go, I'll find a teacher, and I'll see what's involved. And I'll, you know, I'm sick of thinking about it, so I'm going to do something about it. Kind of purge my mind. So I found a teacher, an Italian man in Brisbane, where I lived, and I went to see him, and he brought me into his little kind of box room where he had his, where he taught, I suppose. And he said, okay, well, I'll play you a little bit of something and you'll see what it's like. And he charged into this rousing kind of tango, and small space and big sound. Like if you're up close to a piano accordion when someone's playing it with a lot of welly, you know, it's impressive, right? And I was quite moved, you know. I was like, wow, this is, whew, I'm feeling a bit, you know, a bit emotional here. I'm definitely in the right place. Now it all makes sense. Now I know what's going on here. I didn't start crying, just in case you're wondering. Gino was the guy. He didn't look like the sort of guy you cried around. I think he came from an army kind of band background. So anyway, so I started learning how to play the piano accordion. I bought a piano accordion, black. Just happened to be, I didn't go looking for a black one. It just was a secondhand one. It came up, and when I got there, it was a black one. I was like, of course it's a black one. That's the vision I was having. And I learned how to play. I bashed away on it for 6 months, learning, getting better slowly, as you know. And if you've ever learned a musical instrument, the first few months are horrible for anyone listening, and even for yourself listening. But yeah, I made progress and it was going well, and it became quite a thing in my life, you know, learning the piano accordion. So, as I say, about 6 months later, after I had bought the accordion, I was practicing, I was going right into it. I was standing in my treatment room in Brisbane, looking out the window, as I did many, many times between patients, and I noticed the garden gnomes that I had looked out and seen. All those many times I looked out the window, and I noticed that one of the garden gnomes was playing a piano accordion. And I was like, don't tell me. All that synchronous, deep, you know, I have a feeling and it's intuition. All it was me treating people, coming out of this kind of meditative state as waiting for the next person and looking out the window and unconsciously taking in this gnome, this garden gnome playing the piano accordion. Is that all it was? Is it that mundane? Now, I don't know if it was. I'd say probably a bit of both, because like the Brooke Shields story, maybe I had seen the article before, or maybe not. And that's what I mean about my experience, life is kind of paradoxical. Like, it's full of paradoxes, because maybe I had seen that article, but maybe I hadn't. And maybe, you know, I'll tell you another weird or synchronous thing. I put that post about Brooke Shields and the piano accordion story on Instagram. And the next day, I got a card in the mail from my friend Emma in Los Angeles. And she'd been to the Broad, I think it was the Broad Gallery in Los Angeles. And she'd spent a lot of time in this particular, at one particular installation. And she knew I'd played the piano accordion. And she sent me a card of this particular installation. And on the card, it's a picture of a woman playing the piano accordion. Now, here's the spooky part. That card arrived the day after I posted the post about the Brooke Shields story and the me learning the piano accordion, that story. Now, she would have had to post that, you know, days beforehand, because it was a, you know, physical paper card that arrived. It wasn't like she sent me an email in response. So, you know, that's pretty synchronous and beautiful and lovely and weird. And like, for me anyway, with that, with all that kind of stuff, I kind of give equally to both. It could, you know, could be just random, and it could be deeply synchronous and meaningful, and probably for me anyway, not to be too invested in one or the other. Like when I made that post, somebody left a comment about, oh, there's so many, synchronicity is a real thing, and Carl Jung this, and you know, and they got very about it. And like, yeah, fine. I personally, you know, I'm not that invested in one or the other, because, you know, I like the cosmic joke that, you know, we take ourselves way too seriously, and we think we're going to live forever. Like, we think we're killing the planet, which is hilarious, because if we become too much of a problem for the planet's going to kill us. No, like a big cosmic sneeze would just be sneezed off the planet. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do everything we can to respect and honor nature. But I think it's like, I think it's funny, like, how seriously we take ourselves. So I think completely buying into or believing, oh, it's all synchrony, it's all deep, it's all meaningful, it's kind of good to kind of look out the window every now and then and see the garden gnome and go, oh, for God's sake, it's not, it's just me being, you know, like a Pavlovian dog, you know, just, yeah, you know, piano accordion, piano accordion, piano accordion, and then eventually I'm going, oh my God, I have to learn the piano accordion. Like, I think that's very good for my not taking myself too seriously. The other thing that's going on is I'm updating one of my books. It's my second book. It's called Why Do We Get Sick? Why Do We Get Better? A Wellness Detective Manual, which I wrote in 2006. And yeah, I thought it was kind of time to relook at it and give it an update, because it's a book about health and wellness and how do we get sick and how do we get better? Why do we get sick? Why do we get better? Hence the name. And yeah, I thought, well, it's not one of those. Like, my third book, May Annoys, it's, I don't think I'd ever go back and change that, or the one before it, but then again, I wouldn't change that. But Why Do We Get Sick? Why Do We Get Better? It's more of a workbook kind of thing. There's questions in it, and it's quite more interactive. So I thought, yeah, I'm a different person now. Maybe I'll have different insights. So I've rewritten, or I'm in the process of rewriting that and adding and changing and deleting and adding bits to it. And my daughter Yasmin is designing the cover, so that's very nice and gratifying for me. So that's coming. And I've been thinking about namaste a lot, which sounds ridiculous when you say it like that, when I say it like that. But I didn't know what namaste was for a while. I would just find it being said. Yeah, and it was always, nearly always, when I started to hear this first, it was usually at the end of some other thing that was a very distracting thing unto itself. So I would have been at some sort of meditation thing, and I would have been thinking about the meditation, and it would have been all different, and you might have had to take your shoes off when you went into the room, and like, what am I doing that? And, okay, fine, blah, 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 get to the end of it, and then I was like, yeah, well, what's that all about? And then namaste, I'm like, what? Oh, why are we're holding our hands together and we're bowing? Okay, fine, I'll just, yeah, just, so it took me a while to kind of, what are they saying? What is that word? Why? Yeah. And it kind of, like, I kind of have a prejudice against things that are given a little bit too much reverence just because they're not from the culture that I grew up in. Like, so, you know, if I'm somewhere and it's like, oh, this is, say, Indian, or, you know, it's Hindu and it's very, or it's Tibetan and it's very holy. If it's Russia, so it's extra Russian, and, you know, or if it's Italian, it's extra olive oily, anything like that. I'm like, I get a little bit irked, I suppose, mainly because, well, not mainly, I've always said this, but I particularly saw it when I lived in Australia, because when I lived in Australia, I was like 20-25% more interesting just because I was from Ireland. People would say, oh, I love your accent. It's so, I could listen to you talk all day. And to me, I'm like, oh, geez, there's, you know, everybody in Dublin talks the way I talk, or everybody in Ireland. Well, not Ireland, because, you know, we've got lots of different counties and all the accents are different in each county. Small country, lots of different accents. But certainly in Dublin, which is probably the, I mean, it's good in some ways, but there are much more lyrical accents, Irish accents, than the Dublin accents. No, it didn't matter. Oh, you've got, I love listening to your voice. And at the back of my mind, I'm going, well, they're just saying that because I'm not from around here. I'm not Australian. So anything that's not from around here has got to be more interesting and more exotic. So when I hear, you know, somebody using the Indian name for something, and it's, you know, it's deep and very deep, very spiritual, I'm like, yeah, I'm not so sure. So I kind of had that reaction to Namaste. I'm like, oh God, here we go. Here's another word, you know. Why can't they just say what it means? Say the thing. Like, yeah. So when I got over that and looked it up and kind of, well, what does it mean? What are they actually saying? It's actually lovely, I discovered. Because it roughly translates to the Buddha in me sees the Buddha in you. And that's a lovely place to come from when I'm interacting with another person. And it's a familiar thing for me without the words. I hadn't really put it in those words, but like knowing who I am and that in my essence, you know, apart from all my stuff, that right down, when I get right down into it, I don't really have anything going on in there. I just have this nice, loving feeling towards everybody. I want the best for everybody. I want everything to be okay. I want everyone to get on. And I don't have any, you know, that person should do this thing. And I don't have any of that. I'm just sweet, natural, and lovely. I know, like, that's me on the inside. When nothing else is going on, like right down the bottom of the ocean of me, that's what's going on. So it's like that bit of me is seeing the same in the other person. That's the part I am seeing and acknowledging, and that's lovely. So when I said I was thinking a lot about Namaste, I was more thinking about the opposite of it, because it sort of became really clear to me that whenever I was having a problem with another person, the part of me that was having the problem was not that part. So if we use the terminology in Namaste, it wasn't the Buddha in me seeing the Buddha in them, it was something else. I don't really like the whole duality, good and evil, good and bad, you know. So I don't want to, it's not that I don't like it or, you know, feel uncomfortable with it. It just doesn't feel like it's an accurate description. For me, it feels more like, you know, there's this consciousness and then there's unconsciousness, or there's love and then there's not love. It's not a great ad for me as a writer, but anyway, this stuff is hard. I find this stuff hard to put words on. So I kind of was going, yeah, that's not me. I don't mean that in a kind of irresponsible way. It's just a feeling of like, no, that when I'm complaining about somebody on the inside, I feel I've moved away from who I am. That's kind of what it feels like. Or it's the kind of unconscious part of me is, and this was the realization, was it's actually resonating with or looking for the unconsciousness in the other person, or looking at the unconsciousness in the other person. So I've got a problem on the inside with that person. And like on paper, I'm sure I'm very justified. I've got very good reason to be upset. That person did that thing on me, and they shouldn't have done it, and it's an injustice and all that. But the overriding feeling on the inside is I just know I have moved away from who I am on the inside. And it seemed like it's the polar opposite of namaste. Like the unconsciousness in me was seeing the unconsciousness in them. And seeing that made it kind of easier to not get so caught up in it. Because, you know, I just know I don't really want to do that. And there's something very liberating and sweet about just dropping it. Because I know that's the truth for me. It's like, I don't really care. I don't really care about that stuff. I trust in life, like I said at the beginning. Trust in life, and I trust in love. Not in a naive way, but just in a, you know, that it actually is very powerful. And it's what is running my life, and it's what's running the bigger life that I am trying to listen to, that I, you know, don't really understand, but I try to. So getting caught up in the unconscious part of me, and getting, you know, focusing on the unconscious of the other person, being able to see that, it's like, oh yeah, right, that's, I'm doing that again. I'm just doing that thing again and just letting it go. And it's so, particularly the part of me that's really worked up ahead of steam of fear and, you know, whatever it's about, you know, it's like, oh my God, that person is doing that thing again. I know what they're like. I know where this is going to go. It's going to be disastrous, and I am going to get pulled into this black hole of disaster. And kind of going, well, maybe that will happen, or maybe not. But it's not happening now, and I'm just going to not focus on that. I'm going to focus on the good in that person. What I know them to, the bits of them that I've seen, the brilliance that they are, and I'm going to focus on that. Because that's the best bits of me, or the most conscious bits of me, focusing on the most conscious bits of, on them. And so far, I can report that it's worked out pretty good for me. What's the new bit is just having this realization. I don't think I saw it so clearly before. I think in the past it was more of a kind of a gray area, going from unconscious to conscious. Whereas I think this thing about namaste and thinking about namaste, because it's not gray. It's like the good in me sees the good in you, or the love that I am sees the love that you are. You know, that's pretty easy to go, oh yeah, that's that, and I'm seeing that and that other person. And because it's that defined, it's pretty easy to see when I'm not doing that. It's pretty easy for me to kind of go, no, that is not the good, the love in me seeing the love in that person. That is whatever the opposite of that is. It's the unconscious in me seeing the unconscious in that person. And is that what I really want to focus on? I might be right, you know, because often that stuff, that unconscious part of me is like, I'm right. I've got a great injustice here. I've got a right to this thing. And, you know, yes, that's going to lead us to disaster. I actually don't want, I don't want that disaster to actually happen. I'd rather be wrong and for some beautiful outcome to happen than be right. And that's a funny thing to remember in the middle of it, because when I look into it, all that's driving that is my unconscious, which is my fear and my anxiety and my, you know, apprehension and the past and the terrible things that have happened to me in the past, just like the terrible things that have happened to you in your past, I'm sure, talking to me and going, oh, we don't want that to happen again. And I know that that's not who I am. So it's a funny thing because it sort of feels like it's trying to protect me from future disaster, but it doesn't really, and in a way, in some many ways, it actually creates the future disaster. So it was lovely to have this realization, lovely and sad, to kind of go, oh, look, there's the unconscious in me, resonating with the unconscious in that person. But then lovely because it's so clear, it's easier to drop it and to go, oh yeah, that's not who I am. I know that's not who I am. And it's not what I want for that person. I don't want my dire predictions and fantastic analysis of their personality to be true. I want the best in them. I want the best for them and I want the best in them. I want to see that. I want to focus on the best in them. And yeah, come back into that kind of namaste thing. So that's been lovely for me to see that. So I've told you about that. My painting is going well. I've been kind of fascinated with this particular kind of paint lately. It's a kind of a metallic paint. I've got three pictures on the go that I've used this metallic paint in. And yeah, I'm just sort of working away on those. Main kind of thing I'm focused on in my painting at the moment is, as well as all the technical stuff, is the feeling. It's that thing I got from Bo Bartlett about paint being able to magically capture the emotion or energy of the, or intent, that's probably a better way of putting it, intent of the artist, like he was talking in the podcast the interview I had with him, where he was talking about blowing on the brush before he applied the paint, or encouraging his students to do that. So yeah, I've been kind of bringing a bit of that, like before I start, I kind of check how I am on the inside. I think about what the picture means to me, or what I'm, the vision of the picture I have, I suppose, what that means for me. And then really feeling that, and then trying to be with that when I'm painting, really being with that feeling, because I think he's right. I think it does get captured in the paint in some way, some magical way. Right. I'm going to leave it. What have we got? About 37 minutes, 36, 7 minutes. Going to leave it at that for now. Let me know if you like these little chats, little catch up. I'll do more. If I don't hear from anybody, I probably won't do any more. And yeah, let's see how the experiment goes. You know, quick to do, quick to get out. And yeah, until the next time. Bye for now.
I've never felt this good in my entire life. Make me some spaghetti. We are the Argyle Pimps, so buy us a drink, come on!